Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Lazarus Department Store was so much of an icon of Columbus that many people here assumed it would last forever. But after 153 years, the downtown store closed in 2004. Still, Central Ohioans, despite their adoration of the store, never maybe realized what a significant role the store and the family behind it played in the history of retail in the United States. Joining us today are David and Beverly Myers. They are the co-authors of Look to Lazarus, The Big Store. David's previous books include Historic Columbus Crimes, Central Ohio's Historic Prisons, and Columbus, The Musical Crossroads. Welcome, David and Beverly.
Thank you, Ann.
It's good to be here.
And also, where credit's due, your daughter, Elise Myers Walker, also was the third co-author of the book. She collaborated with you, David, on other books as well. So
that's
it's kind of a family operation.
Correct.
A theme that runs through the book, and I mentioned it at the outset, is that the Lazarus family's penchant for innovation. They were always changing things and looking for ways to make things better.
Yeah, that was really probably the most eye-opening thing for me in researching the story. I grew up in Columbus. I had, gone to Lazarus as a customer. I even worked there briefly between high school and college. So I had some knowledge of Lazarus, but just what they had accomplished and how prescient they were and innovative, and they were on the right side of all issues. I mean, they were I think people probably remember they called their employees associates.
Right.
Well, that started way back before World War One. They were calling them associates already. And it just was an indication of how they regarded people, how they treated people. And they, were very open to minorities. I mean, they welcomed
African Americans as most stores wouldn't even sell.
Right.
I actually had African American associates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And friends. I mean, I discussed, Charles I. Hood, who was the father of Earl Hood, who was a well-known band leader here for many years at Valleydale. But he had a grocery store, and he was their neighbor on South High Street. And Earl had told me years ago about just how they welcomed the family and were there to help them whenever they needed help, and how his father tried to model himself after the Lazarus family.
Some of the innovations, one of them that was helping create the Federated Group.
That's correct.
A move that eventually did end Lazarus. Can you talk about the Federated department stores and when that started and how it started?
That was Fred Jr. is the one who was the mastermind behind that. And his older brother, Simon, was basically the head of the store, because they went by the age. And so when he came in, he did another innovative thing he did was he established accounts receivable, which wasn't an accounting practice that was occurring at the time. But he, in 1929, was trying to think of ways to strengthen, we had the economy was going into a downturn, the Black Friday on Wall Street and things. He was trying to think of ways of strengthening their position. And so he was on a yacht with the head of Abraham and Strauss and Filene's and Bloomingdale's and started pitching this idea of forming an organization, which they called Federated Department Stores, which would combine their resources as far as purchasing and that kind of thing to strengthen them. They weren't dictating to each other, but originally it was just an association so they have greater combined buying strength. But he was instrumental in putting that together, and that's the way it remained up until 1945 when Lincoln Filene moved up, and Fred Jr. then took his position and started doing acquisitions right away and going around and collecting basically all these family department stores across the country and bringing them into the Federation to make them even stronger and stronger. And the key motivator for him to do that was he realized early on after they made the arrangement in 1929 that it hadn't really been in the best interest of Lazarus. And the reason being is you got shares in the Federation based upon the size of your market. And Lazarus Market, in comparative, you know, Philadelphia and New York, was much smaller. And so they got fewer shares, but they were the ones that were doing the lion's share of the business. And so he wanted to correct that. And so what he thought is he'd make Federated as strong as he could. And so, and he did. I mean, he...
We're talking about a new book. It's called Look to Lazarus, The Big Store. It's written by Dave and Beverly Myers and their daughter, Elise Myers Walker. There is a Meet the Author book signing with the trio?
Yes.
All three of you at Barnes & Noble in Upper Arlington on Saturday. For more information, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have a link to the book and a link to the details of that as well. So if you want to speak with our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go on to our All Sides with Ann Fisher web Facebook page and post your question or comment there. You know, when you start talking about the family tree and all the different Freds, and, you know, I was so glad to know that the Many Happy Returns Lazarus, it's a website devoted at WOSU devoted to the documentary they did a few years ago when Lazarus closed. And they had the family tree all written out for me, because it is a little daunting to think about the family. It was pretty big at one. There were five boys, four who survived?
It depends. They had different involvements in the store. And I had the same problem that you have, and I still do.
We won't get bogged down in
that. Yeah, let's not get bogged down in that too much. But that's what made it interesting, is that it was a family business, and it was a family business basically up until the fourth generation. And at that point, they started discouraging family members to go into the store because it wasn't the same familiar atmosphere that it had been before. Because by this time, Federated was basically running things, and so it was, you know, and by the time you got to the fifth generation, nobody was going into the store. But they didn't need to. The family had made the money, and they could go off and pursue their own interests.
You know, you were talking about their forward thinking as far as women and minorities.
Yes.
And women in particular. There was one of the brothers who didn't want women at all in the store, but he died eventually, and they somewhat ignored him. But they were very forward thinking in terms of women, particularly working in the stores.
Yes, they were department heads. Women, a lot of women were department heads, and they got trained just like the men. You know, if they came in and they saw a spark, the Lazarus family saw a spark, you know, they nurtured that spark, and then they sent them off to learn new things.
And 614-292-8513, by the way, if you want to give a call and talk about it. We're very interested in hearing about people's memories of Lazarus. I know it's Christmas time. A lot of people, whenever I hear someone talk about Lazarus, they often talk about the Christmas windows and that kind of thing. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. But the women in the family, Beverly, did not get involved.
No.
Were they forbidden to get involved, or what do you think?
Yes. Yes. But, you know, they were leaders in their own way. I know when we were interviewing a lot of the men that, you know, were executives in the Lazarus store, their wives just tried to emulate the Lazarus women with their style and their class and the graciousness.
They basically saw, you know, other than Amelia, who was Simon, the founder's wife, mm-hmm. who, after he died, took an interest in the store, there weren't any Lazarus women involved after that. And it was because they felt, you know, I think it was just it's an indication of what the times that they lived in, as women weren't in those roles, and especially their women. They wanted them to be involved in civic things, because Lazarus was always a very civic-minded family. And, you know, so they did a lot of charitable work, and they were on boards and that kind of thing. So.
Yes, they worked out in the community on behalf of Lazarus. And as David said, it was the time, you know, the wife, the mother, and the homemaker, and the volunteer.
But at the same token, it also was the time to not necessarily put women in management positions and not promote women, and they did do that.
They did do that, yes.
Larry in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Oh, hi. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Do you folks know where, when I was a kid, I used to go down with, like every other kid, with his mom to Lazarus on the bus, and my mom would pay her bill at Lazarus. And where you paid the bill, there was a little exhibit. Was like a small, I guess you called it a diorama, of a Columbus street scene of soldiers marching down High Street. I guess it would be the period of the Spanish-American War. And yeah. It used to fascinate me. I used to look at that thing every time I went down there, and I've often wondered whatever happened to that.
What was the story behind it?
Well, the dioramas came about from 1951 when they were doing their centennial, and they built a series of dioramas basically illustrating different significant Ohio events and a lot of them Columbus events. And the ones that you saw were the ones that survived, you know, until that time. I think there are bits and pieces of them left, but I don't think there are any that have the entire. I mean, I saw pictures of one of them, the one you're talking about, and it was nothing like the original. I mean, it had been stripped down considerably. But, yeah, that was developed strictly for the 1951 centennial, and there were postcards were sold of those.
Thanks, Larry, for your call. 614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call and talk with our guests, David and Beverly Myers, they're co-authors of a new book. It's called Look to Lazarus, The Big Store. It's about the Lazarus Department Store, the one downtown specifically. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, 33 degrees in downtown Columbus. Mostly sunny skies and a high near 40 today. A few clouds tonight, a low of 30 degrees. A slight chance of a little snow on Friday and a high of 40. And sunny with a high of 31 on Saturday.
Support for 89.7 comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television, and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to discover WOSU Public Media.
And for the latest local news, be sure to visit our website, WOSU.org. You can hear the latest from our award-winning news team. On our website, you can listen to a story again, share it with a friend, or catch up on news you missed. Visit WOSU.org. And remember, beginning tomorrow at 5 p.m., WOSU will no longer broadcast on 820 a.m. To hear your favorite shows, set your radio dial to 89.7 FM. And All Sides continues.
My guests are David and Beverly Myers, the co-authors of Look to Lazarus, The Big Store. It's a new book that's out. They have a Meet the Authors and book signing on Saturday. You can learn more about that. Go to WOSU.org/allsides, and we will provide you with the information you need. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you would like to speak with David and Beverly Myers. One thing, the book is filled with tidbits. It's one after another, yes, that you go, oh, and it's so woven into the fabric of the history of Columbus. One thing, though, that always I always noticed when I would go into Lazarus and the street level entrance is, in contrast to every other department store I can think of, the Lazarus Main Street entrance opened onto the men's department.
Yes.
And that was very conscious. What was their philosophy about that? I thought it was fascinating.
That goes back to Ralph, who was one of the sons of the original founder, Simon. And he basically didn't have much use for women. And Ralph, he remained a bachelor his entire life.
This is
life.
The one I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But at the time, it wasn't unusual. The belief was that men would not go into a store that sold women's things because it was too embarrassing or they didn't want to encounter the women or whatever. So Lazarus always put them right by the front door, so they wouldn't have to go deep into the store and be embarrassed by lingerie or whatever that was being sold. And that remained true until the end.
It did. 614-292-8513. Henrietta, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Henrietta.
Well, good morning, and thank you. Mm-hmm. I just was having a conversation with my sisters and brothers in regards to Lazarus just recently, how our parents would come up twice a year to do shopping, and it was just a wonderful time to be there. We came up from Southern Ohio, and the people were just so cordial, and just it was just a wonderful air to be there and to go upstairs and to eat and, you know, just to enjoy.
When was this,
people.
Henrietta?
This was in the 60s, 70s.
Cordiality and courtesy to the customer was a very big deal. Not.
Yes, yes. They, you know, they preach that the customer is always right way back, you know, towards the beginnings. Basically, from the beginning, that's what they taught. And it started out with, you know, basically the idea that no sale was final. You know, if you aren't happy with it, bring it back. We'll replace it. No questions
they
asked.
They took back things that they didn't even sell.
And they knowingly, they took them back. And that's because the philosophy of the Lazarus family was that one unhappy person was going to cost you at least four sales. And so they would take it back.
No matter what. No questions asked.
But as far as, you know, as the caller's experience, we've heard this over and over and over again. Just yesterday I had lunch with a woman I used to work with who's from Kentucky. And she talked about the pilgrimage they would make to Columbus. In fact, she bought three copies of the book. She's going to buy some more for people back in Kentucky. And it didn't occur to me that they would come that far. But I know that Barbara Robinson from Portsmouth, who wrote Best Christmas Pageant Ever. I've got a letter from her from years ago when she mentions the trips they would make up, you know, up 23 to Columbus to shop at Lazarus. And so this was, that's why in 1951, at the time of the centennial, there was an article in Newsweek about Lazarus and mentioned the fact that they controlled 60% of the department store market in their area. And at that time, 11 cents out of every dollar spent in Columbus went through Lazarus.
And that was unheard of.
Yes, yes. And there wasn't another store in the country that dominated its market like that. And that's why the Lazarus store was the envy of every other store. Everybody wanted to be like Lazarus because everybody else had to work much harder. But they were working, I mean, because they had created this culture.
Not only did they have everything in the store you could possibly want, but they shipped it back to your house. You know, you got it delivered to your doorstep. And not only that, but there were constantly demonstrations and entertainment and just all kinds of things going on.
Yeah, Fred Jr. wanted it to be the big circus.
The circus,
what he called
right.
it, with 100 to 200 events going on within the downtown store every day.
They were one of the first to start the home deliveries. It started and then stopped because one of their horse-drawn carriages ran into a streetcar or something,
right.
And he didn't like that.
No.
That was a little too dangerous, but after the war.
Yes, yes, they started again. And, you know, they would make several deliveries a day. You know, it's just unbelievable. And that's, you know, kind of the what we tried to capture in the book is that, you know, this was the era of these grand emporiums, and it's gone now. And if you didn't experience it, there's no place you can go now to kind of relive that.
You kind of talked a little bit about it, the accounts receivable issue, but that's a big deal because that helped them manage their inventory. And, you know, again, we think of accounts receivable. It's very much a part of our lexicon now, but it was Amelia, was it?
No, that was Fred.
Fred.
Yeah, Jr. that did that. But basically the idea being you count the sale at the time that it occurs.
Not when the money comes in.
Well, when the money comes in, that way you reorder that. And that was kind of a revolutionary thing to do. And, you know, so The other federated stores started doing it as well, and it was adopted by everyone practically after that.
Greg in Groveport, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Hey, thank you very much for the show. I love it.
You're welcome.
Because I was born in 57, and because I was right in Columbus, Ohio, we went to Lazarus a lot. So when my children were born and they were old enough to tag along with us and go to the store, we had a really nice event when we met Mr. Tree.
Yes.
And I sat down with all my children, and a lot of the children were kind of having, you know, it didn't seem to be real communicative. So I kind of tagged along with Mr. Tree, and him and I worked together, and we had a really fun time. Later, I was in line to pay one of our, you know, pay one of our accounts, and this man comes up to me and shook my hand, and this goes to show how people-friendly Lazarus always was. And he was the person that was in Mr. Tree.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing because, you know, Lazarus, I do believe, you're probably in your book, kind of tied with Lucy's Toy Shop at the time.
Yes.
Yes. We tried to find a picture of Mr. Tree, and we just couldn't.
A good picture.
Really?
We found
bad pictures, but not good ones. Not one that we could put in the book, and that was really sad.
Wow, that's sad.
Oh, well, Greg, why don't you tell, for those of us out here who don't know what Mr. Tree is, I do, tell us what Mr. Tree is.
Mr. Tree was on a show in the 60s, and it was like, wake up, Mr. Tree, it's very nice to see you. And it was, the kids would gather around Mr. Tree and talk to him about everything from deers and just fun things. That's really, it was a memory, but it was just the highlight of my time to sit down with him, with my own children, because that's what my mother took us there to see, that kind of stuff. And that's just such a credit to Lazarus, and I want to just thank you.
All right. Thanks, Greg, for your call.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Brent on Facebook wrote, as a child growing up in the 60s, I loved when my mother took me to Lazarus to visit Santa Claus. The top floor was turned into a magical winter land with toys and decorations with fake snow everywhere. We had to walk through a beautiful maze to get to Old St. Nick. Wonderful memories.
Yeah, and the maze was because they had several Santas.
And so you really didn't wait very long,
which
was good because, you know, you were entertained as a child while you were getting to Santa, and then you got to get to Santa right away. And you really didn't see anyone else with Santa, so you thought you were really special.
Yeah, the Santa bells would lead you to the Santa that was available at that time, and that was...
Was that typical in that have more than one Santa like that?
It was typical for Lazarus because of the demand. I mean, you had so many people going through the store, Mike Harden worked briefly there, you know, as one of his articles, and he talks about that. But
great Mike Harden.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But multiple Santas, but it was, you know, it was all the same Santa, and everybody knew that the Lazarus Santa was the only real Santa anyway. And this, you know, in my childhood, you know, all the local TV stations had Santa shows, you know, at the end of the after school every day, and. But the Lazarus one, and Lazarus had their, you know, they worked with Lucy's Toy Shop, which was on WBNS TV, and at Christmas time, Lucy's Toy Shop became Santa's Toy Shop, so that's why Santa was there, and it was the Lazarus Santa, and that's where Mr. Tree was.
And Santa didn't roam the store. Yeah. The only place you could see Santa was in Santa Land.
Mm-hmm. Nancy in Columbus, welcome to the show, Nancy.
The real Santa was on Lucy's Toy Shop. I was thinking today is the 117th anniversary of the birth of James Thurber. And if you read any of his biographies on Thurber, he's often talking about shopping at Lazarus or having lunch in the chintz room. And, you know, I think probably all of us that have lived here forever store all of our priceless Christmas ornaments in these deep boxes that have different lids from the different decades of Lazarus. And I was wondering, I was going through my grandmother's things, and I found a lot of shopping bags that were time-stamped. They go back as far as 1914.
Gee.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I can't throw them away. They're artifact of a different time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all remember going to the chintz room and standing behind the red ropes.
Did you love the chicken salad?
Oh, yeah, but they also had children menu, and if you ate all your food, there would be pictures on the plate.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember as a kid they had models come in and model the fashions.
Oh, wasn't that elegant? I always thought that I was just so special when the models would waft through the chintz room while I was eating my chicken salad.
Yeah. But do you know if there are any well-known people that have talked about Lazarus? You know, I always tell people that George Clooney went to St. Michael's when his dad, Nick, worked at Channel 4, and this would have been in the late 60s, 70s. And I think of, like, Rod Serling. He went to Antioch. I mean, of course, he was from Binghamton, New York, but he would come to Columbus because his mother lived here.
Anybody
and
famous?
He did an episode of Night Gallery based upon his frequent stops in at Larry's Bar. He wrote a thing called They're Tearing Down Tim Riley's Bar. Have any well-known people recounted stories of Lazarus?
Thurber did mention that his mother took him there when he was a young boy, and she was, you know, a very eccentric individual, and she would pretend to shoplift so that the store, you know, walkers would follow them around the store. But they, you know, they got onto what she was harmless, basically. But they would go in and pretend to be shoplifters. We've got one anecdote in there about Eileen Heckert, the actress from Bexley. And when she was 12, she threw a famous tantrum in Lazarus because her grandmother wouldn't buy her a hat. And I guess this was, you know, attracted attention from all over. And so the grandmother finally bought her the hat, then took her outside and punched her in the mouth. And she said, but I got to keep the hat. You know, so
there's your famous story, Nancy. Yeah. Thanks, Nancy, for that call. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation about Lazarus Department Store. My guests are David and Beverly Myers, two of the three co-authors of Look to Lazarus, The Big Store. That's what we're talking about right now. From Amy on Facebook, my memory, getting all dressed up in my red wool coat, patent leather Mary Janes and white tights, riding the bus with my mom and siblings from Clintonville downtown to shop. After grilled cheese at the Woolworths lunch counter and taking in the animated window displays, the highlight, of course, was the sixth floor toy department, which must have been magnificent.
It's interesting because the people you interview, women tend to have the same memory. And it was always about getting dressed up, you know, in their finery. And
even wearing gloves.
And wearing gloves, yes. And making a day of it and eating in the chintz room. I mean, I've heard that story from practically every woman that's mentioned it.
Right.
Mentioned Lazarus to me. For guys, for, you know, when they were young boys, it was always the independent thing. They went by themselves. They didn't go with their mother. They went by themselves to Lazarus and kind of explored the whole store. And they went there with the idea of buying something, and they'd come up short for a few pennies. And so the Lazarus clerk would chip in the rest. And I've heard that story over and over again, but that's the boy's story. But Molly O'Neill, who New York Times food writer, I mean, she writes this wonderful story about going downtown to Lazarus and eating in the chintz room.
She's famous.
Yeah, and how, you know, that was, she says, as a result of that, she has a bias in favor of department store food because it was there was nothing more wonderful than that experience.
John in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, John.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm really enjoying the show. I had a couple of memories about the toy store in the basement, too. I remember at Christmas time when they had the Santa, you know, Santa Land. They also had a store for kids only that could go buy, you know, could go buy a gift for your parents. And I thought that was kind of unique. I didn't see too many of those type of things going around, but the other thing I wanted to mention, I was curious, as Lazarus was one of the first major chains to offer a store-branded or a store-only credit card, because I know they were around in the time when, you know, credit cards were just coming into the state of being. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they were one of the first major chains to offer that.
That's correct, yes.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Appreciate your memories. 614-292-8513. If you'd like to share your memories, we have an email from Frank. He writes, I remember when I was a kid, my grandmother worked for the Ann something department. Ann Sterling department. Not sure what it was called. Now we know. She was a supervisor of the department, and I believe it was a catalog department. I remember how magical it was when we went down, especially at Christmas with the windows. The talking tree was always a big thing in the kids' play area. It seemed shopping was a big family deal. Everyone dressed up and looked good when they shopped there. Here's an interesting email from Debbie. When I was a little girl, I thought the sixth floor of Lazarus was Santa's toy shop. Years later, I had a head injury, which caused flashes of my life to come to me without warning. I would say at least one-third of them are of the downtown store.
How wonderful.
Yeah, this place was important. I wish they would restore that building as it was and use it as a tourist attraction. 614-292-8513 if you want to join the conversation. And Jane on the Far East Side, you're on the show. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Janet. I'm sorry, Janet. I said Jane. I apologize.
That's okay. I'm really enjoying this very much. I have very I'm 75 years old, and I have very fond memories of Lazarus and of going there as a child to see the real Santa, as David pointed out before.
Did you go through the maze, Janet?
I don't remember that.
Okay.
But I took my children when they when we lived in Fairfield County and they were small. I would always take them to Lazarus to see the real Santa. That was the highlight of the holidays. And this is just really a joy to hear all these stories and to reminisce. And I think I'm going to buy some of the books for Christmas gifts.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jenna, for your call.
Thank you.
Look to Lazarus, The Big Store. That's the book we're talking about with two of the co-authors, David and Beverly Myers. Questions or comments, you're welcome to join the conversation. I am looking for Linda in Powell now. Linda, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I was just going to talk about the shopping. I was a former Columbus teacher, and years ago we got our 13th check right before the Christmas holiday. We got 13 checks in those years. And I remember my kids were so happy the day that came because we took our 13th check, and not all of it, but a lot of it, and we went to Lazarus. And they all were given X amount of money to shop, and then they were given this and that and everything all in one day. And my daughter now has children who go to St. Michael's, and she worked their Secret Santa just a couple days ago. And I said to her, do you remember what we did for your Secret Santa? And of course, and she's 40. And she said, of course I do. I remember we took that extra check you got, and we all went down to the Secret Santa downtown in Lazarus, and you gave us X amount of money, and we bought all the presents, you know? So, you know, they're absolutely right. All of those things are part. When a 40-year-old remembers things like that, that makes it a great part of your family heritage, you know? So anyway, I just wanted to share that they still do it now, but certainly not like Lazarus did it, you know?
Thanks, Linda.
Uh-huh. All right.
You know, one interesting part of the book is the very beginning when you talk about the ready-to-wear, the history of ready-to-wear clothing. It has it has interesting historical connections to war, one in Europe and then the other in the U.S.
Yes. Basically, I said we go a debt of thanks, I guess, to Napoleon Bonaparte for the whole ready-to-wear clothing industry, because when he was back around 1800, when he was waging his wars and conscripting thousands of soldiers, they needed uniforms. And up to that point, everything was really handmade, you know, tailored to the individual. And so it was at that point that they had a few brokers, enterprising brokers, got some seamstresses together and started manufacturing clothing, uniforms for these soldiers. And but it took a number of years before that was adopted by the industry as a whole, or as society as a whole. And the key thing was the Civil War in the United States, because the United States government had compiled the measurements of the soldiers. So they had standardized measurements, and that gave the people who were manufacturing clothing something to work from, so you could actually establish sizes. But for women, it was much later because they weren't soldiers.
Exactly. They wanted the custom made.
Yes.
For many years after the men. We're going to continue our conversation with David and Beverly Myers, co-authors of Look to Lazarus, The Big Store. They're doing a book signing coming up this Saturday. For more information, go to our website at WOSU.org/AllSides, and we'll have the info there and maybe a link for you as well to the book. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, now that Newt Gingrich is having an unexpected surge in the polls, we talk with Karen Tumulty, who's covered him for years. She's a national political correspondent for The Washington Post. We'll look at his political career and how he became a wealthy man after he left Congress by what she describes as playing the Washington system in an entrepreneurial way. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And you can join us tomorrow for All Sides Weekend from 11 till noon and discussion of the arts, the best of arts and culture in Central Ohio. Host Christopher Purdy will be joined by guests from the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. That's All Sides Weekend tomorrow from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design, where the spring semester of Saturday morning art classes for children and youth begins February 4th. Information and online registration are available at www.ccad.edu.
And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you're listening on 8:20 a.m., know that beginning tomorrow at 5 p.m., WOSU will no longer broadcast on 8:20. Tune to 89.7 FM to hear your favorite programs like All Sides with Ann Fisher, Morning Edition, and All Things Considered. Listen to 89.7 FM. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guests are David and Beverly Myers, two of the three co-authors of the book Look to Lazarus, The Big Store. We're talking about the Lazarus Department Store downtown. We have lots of folks calling, and I want to get to as many as the call, many of the calls as we can. We also have an email we have two Facebook messages from Doug on Facebook. My memories, shopping at the Secret Santa Annex, looking at the windows along High Street, and riding the express elevator from the west basement to the sixth floor Santa Land to see Mr. Tree and Santa. From Brian on Facebook, my father, Jim Thomas, designed Mr. Tree and the animated Christmas window, as well as a giant smoke-spewing dragon, which Charles Lazarus made them take down immediately because he thought it would scare off the customers. That's great. Right now I'm going to turn to Carl. Welcome to the show, Carl.
I was born in 42 and lived in Clintonville almost all my life. And I remember taking the trolley down the center of High Street.
Wow.
To Lazarus. As far as I knew, Lazarus was the only thing that was downtown. And then later the bus. And I worked in Lazarus Annex as a stock boy in the 60s. And my wife was a Sanibel. And we got our first credit card from Lazarus and promptly found out after one Christmas season that credit cards could be a curse. It took me a year and a half to pay that thing off. So. But I remember the Santa parades that went down High Street, and they must have started up somewhere in Clintonville because it wasn't hard to walk up to the top of my street, California, and take my two boys up
there.
That's
a long way.
Yes, they did.
They did start in Clintonville.
Wow. So they must have marched for 6 or 7 miles. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they started at Broadway, actually.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Carl, thanks for listening. Benny, I'm looking for you, Benny. Hi, Benny, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Hey, I've heard a couple people say, but for good or for bad, I got my first opportunity for credit at Lazarus by opening up a charge card there. And I, of course, I grew up with Lazarus. I was born in 54, and I had a lot of great experiences. All the Toyland stories are flashing back a lot of good memories. And and I remember that something that with all the online paying that we do anymore, I remember always going to the downtown store and paying my bill. So it was Lazarus, I guess, is responsible for the beginning of my credit history. So.
Okay. Thank you, Benny.
Thank you.
John in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, John.
Yeah, hi, I'm glad to participate in this. Thank you.
Mm-hmm, you're welcome.
A quick story. In the mid-70s, I was the director of staff development at the County Welfare Department, and in taking on that task, I had a good deal of some background in it, but I'd like to learn how Lazarus can treat their customers so well, and how do they model so well in doing that. So I talked to the personnel director. He had a good length, and he gave me some material. One of them that was striking, and it may have appeared in a number of other places, but it was the picture a drawn picture of Mr. Roberts bending over backwards to help the customers. I think we used some of the material, but much of it was more attitudinal and very difficult to transpose that kind of operation to a bureaucratic operation. But it was they were certainly a model for many things.
Yeah. Well, the Lazarus family definitely modeled the behavior that they expected their employees to have. And, you know, they also rewarded their employees. There was recognition for jobs well done. You remember the apples that the associates had on their name tags that indicated that they had done something commendable. And those were valued, and they were, you know, they also had their, you know, newsletter, The Enthusiast, which was created by the employees, where they highlighted people who had done exceptional things. So there was a lot of positive peer rewards in built in.
Also, they had everything in-house. They could do everything there that needed to be done in terms of uplifting the employees, creating educational materials. It was all there. The photography was there. Everything was there.
Thank you, John, for that call. Diana. Diana, you're calling from Belleville. Welcome to the show, Diana.
Hi there. Hi. My husband's mother used to do the newsletter at one time at Lazarus. I don't know if that was when she was single or, you know, I think this was before my husband's time. But she always had high regard for Lazarus. And my daughter and I used to go to the Lazarus in Richland County up at Mansfield, Ontario, and Mansfield, Ohio. And we had many fond memories of having lunch there, and we really liked the cheesecake.
Thanks, Diana. I thought it was interesting to learn from the book that the Lazarus family bought property out in the suburbs back in the 40s, anticipating the growth out there, but decided against it because they knew what it would do to the downtown store.
Yeah, they very much believed that it would dilute the experience. They knew that it would cannibalize sales from the main store, and they wanted to keep everything focused on the main store. So they actually provide their own people to help the city plan the interstate system so that nobody was more than 25 minutes away from the downtown, which meant you weren't more than 25 minutes away from Lazarus. And so they really, you know, resisted as long as they could building any suburban stores, and it wasn't until Sears announced they were coming in.
Those three Northwest.
Yeah, that they knew that they had to protect their market share.
But they saw it coming. They had that vision early on, even though they did resist it.
Chuck in Buckeye Lake, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
And my dad had a store down the street from Lazarus called Cappy Brothers and Sons.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
He made a wealth of money from the customer overflow from Lazarus on Friday and Saturday. He couldn't walk down the sidewalk. And my dad ended up making all the fruit baskets for the annex store across the street for years and years. Then when I grew up and became married, we had a charge card there. We bought our pharmaceutical, our carpeting, our furniture, everything was needed in a household from Lazarus. It was a great, great store, and my dad made a fortune because of its being close to him and working with him on the fruit baskets.
Okay, Chuck, thanks. I remember Cappy's.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Phil in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Thank you. I've got a memory. I don't have any warm, fuzzy memories of Lazarus. I was 40 years old when I moved here. My kids had grown up and had seen the parades in other cities. But I moved from Toronto in 1976 and closed on the house. I think it was October 6th. And after I signed the papers, the real estate guy said, "Well, drop by the post office and see if you have any mail." And I thought, well, you know, nobody knows I'm here, you know, except my wife and the people who hired me. So I went down to the post office and gave them my name. And sure enough, there was one letter, and it was a credit card application from Lazarus. The marketing professional, I thought, hey, these guys are really sharp.
That's a good story, Phil. Thank you.
Basically took it off the deed transfers. So there was a time when that store was really very well run.
Thanks a lot. Let's see. Gail in Upper Arlington, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
My memory is my entire childhood growing up, I was born in 58. My aunt worked at Downtown Lazarus and Ladies Foundations my entire life. And that was considered a very good job for a woman at the time. They dressed very professionally. And I would always go every January with her and do the inventory back when they actually physically counted every piece in the Ladies Foundation and you had to write it all down. But my most favorite part of all that was you would go to the employees' cafeteria and have lunch during the day and how professionally they all treated one another and how they just all really, really seemed to care about what they did with one another and for the store. And you just don't see that anymore, and I've never forgotten that.
Well, thank you, Gail, for that call.
Yeah, there were 1,500 seats in that employee's cafeteria, but it was very much a melting pot because it didn't matter what level of the organization you worked at, you would go to the employee's cafeteria and interact.
Gail, do you remember getting fitted for a bra? They don't do that anymore, but at Lazarus, you went in, and you went in a private room, and they fitted you for a bra.
Yeah, my Aunt June was very particular about that with my sister and myself.
Okay. Well, thanks, Gail, for that call.
You're welcome.
Babette and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
You're a member of the Lazarus family.
I am. I am Mr. Robert's granddaughter. Robert was the third son, and I am the keeper of the family tree. You can ask me anything.
Anything you want to know? No, they did. You did several interviews with the Lazarus family members.
We interviewed Robert.
Robert, okay.
And then a number of employees that he recommended to us.
I understand that you quoted from my mother's interview, my late mother's interview with the
store. Charlotte.
Yes. That's correct. I haven't read the book yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Babette, how does it feel to be part of that family that and hear all these memories and how it's touched so many people's lives?
It's just wonderful. We loved the documentary that WOSU did. And I remember that when I was small, we, like everybody else said, we had to dress up too, but we also had to behave. I was pretty well behaved, but not all of my family children were. And we all had to behave because we were ambassadors of the family. It was very important. We didn't cut in line at the chintz room. We had to be good little kids or we would get it from our grandfather.
Did you shop at Lazarus?
Only, exclusively at Lazarus. I memorized my mother's charge card number at a pretty early age.
Well, any questions you'd like to ask about that?
What was interesting is going to the Lazarus reunion recently and just seeing the high regard that they hold Robert in, the employees. I mean, to this day, I mean, it's not just that he was a member of the Lazarus family, but they genuinely love the guy. I mean, and they referred to him, as the founder of the feast, before they were eating lunch. And a number of people that we asked to interview, they said, I got to clear it with Mr. Bob first.
Yeah.
And they did, too.
Yeah, and it's not because they thought he was going to censor it. They just wanted him to know.
It was out of respect.
Yes.
Yeah. When I was a senior at Columbus School for Girls, I did my senior program at the store in the computer department. And I would stop in and see my uncle and my grandfather on my breaks. And it was really wonderful to either walk with him or watch him walk through the store because everybody loved him so much. And, they would just light up as he did when he saw them.
Thank you, Babette, for calling and sharing your memories. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
And thanks for listening.
Okay.
Get to we have an email from Katie. I love Lazarus as much as a person can love a retail establishment. Mom would take all five of us downtown to see the lights, the window, and Santa every year. Do you remember the baby animals at Easter?
Yeah.
You remember those?
We mentioned those. We've got a cartoon that was done of that.
My mother was a faithful customer. They were the experts in customer service. I remember when Mom purchased a new mattress from the downtown store. After the delivery, Mom discovered a problem. She called the store. Not only did they replace the mattress, but they sent her a bouquet of flowers to apologize for the inconvenience. Wow.
Now, that happens all the time now, doesn't it?
I'll take a bouquet from anybody. Bill in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you. I just have a quick comment and a question. Okay. My comment is about the secret Santa shop for kids. It wasn't necessarily always cracked up to be. My son one year came out with a tie. It was the worst tie I think I'd ever seen. The only time I ever wore that was at his rehearsal dinner when he got married. The question is regarding the chintz room. Was there ever a cookbook made for the chintz room? And if so, is it perhaps available these days? I'll listen off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
There were multiple cookbooks, recipe books released by Lazarus. I think at least four of them. And we include like the chintz room chicken salad.
I'm looking at it right now.
In the book. Mm-hmm. We've got six recipes in there. Mm-hmm. But if you look, you know, on eBay, you'll be able to find some of these Lazarus recipe books. But they didn't specialize in one restaurant. They would have, you know, several recipes from each one. Because at one time, they had up to 11 or 12 restaurants that operating at one time.
I got time for just one more call. Dennis in Mansfield, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Thank you for having me on the air.
You're welcome.
I worked for Lazarus as a parking garage attendant, and I got paid with $2 bills. I enjoyed shopping at Lazarus and working at Lazarus at Columbus and Mansfield.
Okay, well, thank you for your call, and thanks for listening, Dennis.
Thank you.
Lots of fodder there. You were saying earlier that since you've written the book, you've heard so many great stories.
Yeah. Yes.
The real challenge on something like this is we've had any number of people say, you know, we wish you had interviewed us. Well, we interviewed so many people, and you know, the book's 192 pages, and we had to cut a lot just to get down to that. I couldn't even include all my memories in the book, but it's kind of a good piece for spurring conversation about Lazarus, and because everybody's got memories, and no one has really given us a negative one, and that's just kind of amazing. You know, something had to have gone wrong, but they always fixed it. So the memory's about fixing it.
At first, I thought the fellow from Toronto was going to say that irritated him, but he actually admired the fact.
Yeah, he did.
No.
And they did. They were way out in front on that, too, as far as, you know, using the mails. You know, and they created the Anne Sterling character way back about 1914 or 15 or 16, sometime around there, you know, a fictitious person to answer mail order inquiries. And other stores did that then at the time, too. But they were noted for, you know, they had a tremendous bookstore. And the woman was a real activist, and she had a show on WOSU and to promote books. And authors from all over the country loved this woman. And she, you know, did a lot for getting books out to the farming communities through the mails. So.
Well, I want to thank our guests, David and Beverly Myers, two of the three co-authors of Look to Lazarus, The Big Store. Thanks, David, for joining us today.
Thank you,
Anne. And Beverly as well.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. They're going to be at the Ohio Historical Society. Columbus Historical Society.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. You can get details on that at WOSU.org/AllSides. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from Midwest Photo Exchange, Central Ohio's full-line Canon dealer, family-owned and operated for over 25 years, offering new and used photographic camera equipment, off-camera lighting, printers, supplies, and more, online at mpex.com.